This is The Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
The trend of growing your own food at home is hot, thanks in part to the uncertain times we live in. This week, we'll talk to an expert in gardening and sustainable living for some useful tips you can use.
I see it getting worse. I see food getting more and more expensive. And unfortunately, the thing that happens when food starts getting expensive and you can't afford to feed your kids, violence goes up. That's just the pattern that has repeated over and over again in any one of these scenarios.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, The Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Hello, folks. Leonard Birdsong back with you on The Urban Connection. Glad you can be here. I have a guest today who I think you need to hear from because she talks about producing your own food. In this time of pandemic, we don't know what's going to happen to the world. But my guest, her name is Marjorie Wildcreath. She's a doer. She's also very well educated. She has a BS degree in electrical engineering, cum laude, a master's degree in transpersonal psychology, and a master's of business administration in entrepreneurship. She's also a master gardener. Marjorie Wildcreath, thank you for coming on The Urban Connection. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Leonard. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, you've gave me a good pitch. You know, we met over Zoom a month or so ago, and I liked what I heard. And so I wanted to get you on as soon as I could find a slot. Now, let me just say that is there really a trend about making your own garden, digging up part of your backyard and making a garden? Is this, can people really do this?
That people really can do this, and this really is a trend. And I would say the biggest motivating factor right now is, for example, last month in April, food prices have gone up, depending on which statistics you look at, either 2.8% or 3.6%. So I think most people know about the full-page ad that Tyson Foods put in the New York Times and the Washington Post saying, hey, the food chain is breaking. We're having real problems with the supply chain. We have a problem with with the borders. We didn't let a lot of the migrant workers in, and so
right.
There are crops being plowed under because there's nobody to harvest them. There are crops that are not being planted. There's all kinds of animals being euthanized. There's gallons of milk being poured in rivers. You know, it's just crazy. Then there are some beautiful cases of where people, you know, the farmer said, come get it, and people did come in. But for the large part, we've got a whole system that's in turmoil, and we're starting to see those prices increase in the grocery store, and we're going to see a lot more of that. This is a trend, you know. The price of a good laying hen has gone up.
Yeah. You know? Well, before we get into that, let me just give you a statistic that I heard. 365,000 calories, is that a year? Is that what you can do when you grow your own gardening?
I was talking to a friend and I said, you know, you can grow about half of your own food in your backyard. And she said, no, you know, and I said, yeah, you can. And I said, look, let's just assume a 2,000 calorie a day diet. Now, I actually wish I were eating that because then I would lose this extra 10 pounds. But
we all feel that way. I never get around to it.
Yeah, let's just assume that, you know, so 1,000 calories a day, 365,000. And I just went through the numbers and showed her, look, if you got a little laying flock of six hens in the backyard, they're going to produce about 250 eggs a year each. That's, you know, about 1,500 eggs. It's this many calories. And, you know, if you got a garden and you're growing these crops, you know, and I just went by the numbers and yeah, you can produce about half of a diet in a backyard size space.
Well, you know, you talk about you only need about 100 square feet. Is that to produce your own vegetables?
Yeah, I really recommend a smaller garden like that, like maybe 250-square-foot beds. So that would be a bed that's 4 feet wide by 12.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you can produce a huge amount of food
Give me an idea of what you can produce.
Well, for example, in 100 square feet, you can produce about 100 pounds of potatoes. And, you know, that'll end up being, you know, and a 1 pound of potatoes is, you know, half a pound of potatoes is a good serving size.
Right. Yep.
You know, so you're talking about 200 servings of potatoes, which is a good part of a year's worth of, you know, a meals, right? So,
what about lettuce? Can you do your own lettuce in these smaller gardens?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and really the gardens you should think of as a lot of deep nutrition. And, you know, a little small patch, I grew a small patch of lettuce last summer, and, you know, it was really only 2 feet by 4 feet. And I had more lettuce than I could eat and giving it away and, you know, feeding everybody. So, it, you know, when you, the key thing is to have really good soil. And that's a key component to it. But you can grow an amazing amount of food in a small amount of space.
Well, let me ask this. Do you use any pesticides or fertilizer or anything in these gardens?
I use a little bit of organic fertilizer, but that's also part of why it's really so great to have chickens and rabbits be a part of the whole system, is the rabbits make a lot of really great fertilizer for you. But no, I'm really all into doing this organically because I'm so interested in health. And plus, you know, I'm trying to do this without buying a lot of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about, you know, doing this when it's hard to buy things.
And where do you get your seed?
Well, now that is something I usually do purchase right now. And that's actually one of the other indications that that this is becoming a huge trend, is there's a lot of places are out of stock. But there are still some. The Sustainable Seed Company in California still has a pretty good inventory. And then Baker Creek Seed still has a good inventory. And Johnny Seed still has some. So they're still available. You got to hunt around.
Do any of the big box stores like Lowe's or Home Depot, do they ever have seeds like this?
They usually do. I tend to prefer not to buy from them because I usually want to get what you call heirloom or open pollinated seeds. Mm-hmm. A lot of times the seeds at the big box stores, well, there's two things that are often an issue. And I do want to say, if that's all you got, go for it, right? Don't let that stop you, right? You know,
right.
That's what you got, go get them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the heirloom or open pollinated kind, then you can save seed from that and it will come true to the seed. And also, you know you're not getting anything that's GMO or you know has been too strangely modified. The other
right.
thing is seeds, in order to keep their viability, they should really be kept dark and cool. And you know, I've seen some of those big box stores, they got the seed racks sitting out in the sunshine there, and you're like, that's killing those seeds.
Yeah, I guess so. This is the Urban Connection. My program, as I may have told you, is developed. We try to bring things and information to the African-American community that they wouldn't normally hear on regular radio. So this is something that I think the African-American community needs to know about. However, having had said that, I don't know how many people in the urban areas can raise chickens in their backyard, because part of this is to have chickens and rabbits maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Leonard, there's been a lot of changes happening around that. Like, for example, I lived in Austin, Texas, and 20 years ago, it was not allowed to have chickens in your yard. And then actually, it was just one individual. His name was Selwyn. And he says, I love chickens. They're pets with benefits. And he went on a big campaign. And sure enough, they've turned that whole thing around to now where they have tours of backyard chicken coops throughout Austin every year. So
I'll be darned.
You know, there's a lot that you can do, and especially given these times, everything is changing. And then, you know, I think eggs taste better when they're illegally produced in your backyard.
Oh gosh.
By the way, you don't need a rooster. Those hens will lay eggs just fine without rooster. So the rooster is usually the thing that gives you away.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you can probably have chickens and no one would know.
All right. What about people who live in apartments or condos?
Yes, there's quite a few options. You're probably not going to be able to grow as much, but there's a lot. So, you know, a sunny windowsill, you've got all kinds of plants that you can grow. Sprouts don't even need a lot of sunlight, and there's a lot of nutrition packed in those guys. Definitely your culinary herbs, and then you've got your fire escapes and your patios where you can do a lot of container gardening, and you get a lot out of a container garden. I saw a statistic recently that there are 14,000 usable rooftop acres in Manhattan that could, you know, in New York City. So there's community gardens, and then you know, I love guerrilla gardening, and that, and I've, gosh, I know people.
What is guerrilla? Wait a minute, wait, stop. What is guerrilla gardening, Marjorie?
you just find an empty lot that nobody's, you know, that you've been passing forever, and people have been throwing cans on. You clean it up, start planting stuff, and just grow food there, and you just take it over.
Is that legal?
haven't asked that question yet, you know.
Some questions you don't want to ask.
You know, just go for it. You know, growing food is a good thing. I have found, you know, the Grown Network, we got a whole bunch of people in there, and we have everybody, every stripe and color. We have every political thing, and we've got all kinds of religions, and we've got all kinds of diet preferences. And really, none of us focus on any of that, because we all have one thing in common, and that is we like to eat, and that's what we focus on. So it there's a lot of peace in that, a lot of commonality.
Yeah, I can understand that. How did you get involved with this, Marjorie? I'd like to know. How did you get to this point where you're doing shows and making DVDs and writing about this and getting people to buy seeds and make gardens?
I started probably the way a lot of people are starting right now, and that is out of fear and panic. I used to be a professional money manager. I was structuring real high-yield real estate investment deals in Texas, you know, setting up limited partnerships where we'd buy all these properties. Yep. And I foresaw what would eventually happen in 2008, and I was a few years early, and we you know, took everything apart before then. And I said, what happens in economic collapse? You know, what is the biggest problem? I mean, if are we just going to all, you know, keep doing what we're doing, but we push a wheelbarrow full of money? If that's the case, I'll just get a wheelbarrow and I'll be good, right? You know, but that's not the case, right?
Sounds the like main, the Weimar government in Germany in the 20s.
Yes. But the biggest thing after reading a lot about Weimar Germany and then the Argentinian collapse and the Civil War, and then I went to Cuba and interviewed the Cuban collapse and you know, a lot of collapse survivors, the biggest thing they talk about is hunger. And the food systems always seem to be the big problem whenever there's a collapse situation. And, you know, I know I'm very hopeful that things are going to turn around here, but honestly, we're in a collapse situation right now.
I think you're right.
I see it getting worse. I see food getting more and more expensive. And unfortunately, the thing that happens when food starts getting expensive and you can't afford to feed your kids, violence goes up. That's just the pattern that has repeated over and over again in any one of these scenarios. One of the biggest myths of survivalism is, you know, I'm going to go out and head out and be on my own. And that's right. Actually not successful. What is successful is building community, working with neighbors.
Your first degree was a BS, that's a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering with honors. Did you ever do any electrical engineering?
Oh yeah, absolutely. My first part of my career, I worked for Motorola in the cellular, back when the cellular industry was real young, and I was an expat for them over in Hong Kong, actually, for a long time, working on that, managing that network. And actually, it was there that I got real interested in money, as I was making a lot of money. But I met a man named Robert Kiyosaki, who later became famous as Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I was taking his classes, and I said, wow, you know, as an employee, I'm not really going to ever go that far. So I started, that's how I ended up creating the real estate business was from his teachings. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. It was some great years. Hong Kong was so much fun. And yes, I'm still fundamentally an engineer, and that's, you know, systems. You know, how do we make food growing systems that are simple and easy to understand? And what are the critical things people need to know so they can avoid problems?
We're talking with home garden expert Marjorie Wildcraft. We'll take a quick break and be back with more in a moment here on The Urban Connection.
More of The Urban Connection, straight ahead. Stay tuned. Let's return to The Urban Connection. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Welcome back. Our guest is Marjorie Wildcraft, She's an expert here to share some helpful tips with anyone interested in growing their own food. Marjorie, tell us about your three-part system for growing your own food. I know not everyone can do this, but let's hear it.
The first is a 100-square-foot garden, and I'd recommend you get 2 50-square-foot beds and start to, you know, learn how to manage that. I recommend raised beds. You make them easily out of cinder blocks, like 2-layer-high of cinder blocks. Fill that up with the best quality soil you can. And, you know, start growing out some, grow out what you love to eat, right? That's right. The secret, right? To get, grow out what you love to eat. Then the other is a small backyard flock of hens. So I'd recommend, 6 hens. And if you can get a rooster, by the way, I highly recommend everybody should eat the roosters that crow at 4 a.m. If we all commit to that.
We'd all sleep about, a little bit longer, huh?
We would. And, you know, that'll start producing eggs. You can actually buy laying hens that are already producing right away, and they're lovely, and they're just so much fun. You create a coop for them and maybe set up some different areas where they can go so you can rotate them. And then the other is, this is the more controversial part of the program, but a small rabbitry. And I would recommend you start with rabbits in cages, and then later on, adapt to other systems that are give them a little more free range and mobility. But starting in cages is good because you've got a lot to learn and you want things as controlled as possible as a beginner. But really, my rabbitry was 2.5 feet wide by 20 feet long, and it was divided into 8 cages. And I had a buck and 3 breeding does, and then we had, so each one of those went in one, and then the other 4 cages were for growing out the babies. And I was producing about 75 rabbits a year out of that. And rabbit meat, I mean, everybody laughs about, you know, what does that taste like? Well, it really does taste just like chicken.
Like chicken, right. I've eaten rabbit. I have eaten rabbit. And the question I would have, because obviously I'm an urban guy, where do you buy chickens that are layers, and where do you buy rabbits that can produce? I wouldn't know where to start.
A couple of places, Craigslist. You'd be astonished if you. I was in New York City a while ago, and I heard roosters crowing in New York City. I don't know where you're never gonna find those birds. I don't know if they were feral or if that was intended. I don't know how you could be a feral chicken in New York City, but there were chickens in New York City. So even those sophisticated urbanites. But Craigslist is a great place, or then any type of feed store, like a Tractor Supply type thing, or your local feed store. They especially in the springtime have chicks and rabbits. Local newspapers,
okay.
Active 4-H groups, lots of sources.
All right. Yeah. Well, that sounds good. I never thought about that because, like I say, I never thought about growing my own food. Maybe, who knows, I may be doing it before it's all over. I don't know that I'll have the chickens where I live. But
Well, here's the thing. If you're producing about 75 rabbits a year, oh, my gosh, the rain is just coming in, so I hope that background noise isn't too bad. I can't turn that one off, and I'm grateful for it. So, that's like having, there's 52 weeks in a year, and so, 75 rabbits is, like having a chicken and a half every week. And that's, one rabbit is, for our family of four, it ended up being 2 meals. We'd eat a big part, we'd roast it and have a bat, and then I'd take the rest and put it on a stock pot on the back and add some vegetables, and we'd have, soup the next day. So, you're getting a lot out of that. Also, one other really cool thing about nutrition, people, you take a chicken egg, and people often think that the yolk is actually the chicken. That's not true. The chicken is the clear mucilaginous slime, right? That's actually the chicken. And what that yolk is a food sac that the mama hen provides for the baby that will turn that gelatin into something
chick.
That has chick as legs and wings and beaks and eyes and organs and the beginnings of feathers. And I mean, if there's enough nutrients of macronutrients and micronutrients to take something that's just basically slime into turning it into a whole chick that has the strength to peck out of the shell by itself, there's some really good stuff in that yolk.
right. That's good. That's great to know. As for the rain, Marjorie, you are in Puerto Rico. You told me you're doing some work there.
We came here because the people on the island here are very clearly aware of
that's what I wanted you to know why you were there. Can you tell us?
Well, it was before the pandemic and before everybody suddenly became interested in food security. And, you know, they go where you're wanted, you know, go where you're invited. And, you know, there's a lot of groups here that were like, yeah, we really want to get more backyard food going. And, you know, what can we do to help and how can we get more, you know, get more communication out to the community? And so that's what we came here for. And and then I got swept up in the whole pandemic. But I grew up in Florida, so I love food. This is just like home to me. And Puerto Ricans are so much fun. They're just fun.
Yeah, they can be. However, like you, I've struggled with the language, but I know enough to get around.
There you go. Yeah, I'm working on it. Me and Duolingo, I got a date every night.
All right, let me just ask. I did not say that you are the Grow Network's founder. What is Grow Network?
Well, it's an online community. We're about 450,000 strong right now.
Mm. Wow.
And really all of us come together. And the main purpose of the Grow Network is to stop the destruction of the earth via homegrown food.
Okay. Commercial
agriculture is destroying this planet. And so it's really basically a collection of homesteaders and hippies and survivalists and preppers and just everybody who's interested and some foodies. Foodies in there, you know.
Do you have a website in case someone wants to get in touch with you? Can you give that out if you have one?
Absolutely. I think the best place to do is to just go to growhalf.com, and that's where we have that free video that'll show you the whole system of how to grow half, and then we give you a whole bunch of free resources, different alternative feedstocks for rabbits, or how to have free chicken food, you know, or how to make homemade fertilizers and different gardening, organic gardening toolkits. So lots of resources to actually implement the system. And that's over at growhalf.com.
Mm-hmm. That is a DVD. That's one of your favorite DVDs. As I understand it, over 500,000 copies are in use. Is that right?
Yeah. People really got into it and said, hey, this is really simple and valuable and useful. And we've actually taught, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. Quite a few people in the Grow Network are growing half of their own food, and they really interesting. Like I said, every kind of stripe and color and religion and whatever, and people sharing information about what works and what doesn't, and recipes and tips and techniques for preserving or you know, what's this bug, or all the stuff that's related to it. We have a really active community. It's a lot of fun.
Marjorie Wildcraft, thanks for sharing your expertise with us today. Keep up the good work, okay?
We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Right. We are out of time, but we hope you'll be back to join us again next week for another edition of The Urban Connection.
That wraps up this episode of The Urban Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of The Urban Connection.